all leaders, including you and I, Sean, have blind spots. There are just things we don't know about ourselves, the things that we do and say, the little patterns and ticks that we have. And if you manifest that out to an organization that has blind spots, there is no way for us to know all of those things. Even though we know our customers well over a long period of time, we only know what we know. We know how we've engaged with them with our awareness and knowledge. So not having a wider lens and more people helping us see that and see the whole picture, the true picture, is a huge mistake.
Welcome to Centricity, the podcast dedicated to helping emerging middle market companies pursue growth and bridge the gap between sales and marketing. In today's episode, our host, Sean Doyle, meets with Ram LaPointe to discuss the importance of aligning sales and marketing for business executives, as well as how to properly align the two. If this is your first time listening, we encourage you to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Now, let's dive in.
Welcome back to part two with the conversation with Ram LaPointe from Capricorn Leadership. Ram, we've already given you a flowery welcome, so I'm not going to do that again. Tell me why the name Capricorn Leadership.
Well, I've learned a long time ago to listen to my wife. And so when I was building this firm, putting it together, I was struggling with a name. And I've been in music bands before. Coming up with a name is a big deal. I've spent lots of money on names. And so truth is, I'm a Capricorn. I'm impacted by some iconic legends like Martin Luther King Jr. and the science part of me, Stephen Hawking and Sir Isaac Newton. And then the music part of me, Elvis Presley and David Bowie. And it just turns out all those folks are Capricorn. And so the more I dug into it, there are a lot of really interesting leadership traits with Capricorns. They are stubborn / persistent. They are ambitious. They work really hard. And so, again, I'm not really a huge astrology sign kind of guy, but it seemed to fit for me. So when I describe leadership, it usually has to do with that, with doing some things that are taking time, and they require the leaders to be persistent and sustainable with that effort.
So interesting. I never would have guessed that, but I knew there'd be a good reason. So we are picking up where Ram shared with us in the last episode a lot about culture and his take on culture and insights from the field. And if you didn't catch that, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that. I know I'm going to re-listen to it because there's so many practical thoughts in it. Ram, I want to turn the corner to sales and marketing alignment. But to get there, I want to ask you a question. If there was a proven playbook where you could predict your buyer's behavior that would allow you as an executive to proactively prepare for what your buyers need as they go through that sales journey, that'd be a no-brainer, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. So that's what we call centricity. You were absolutely set up. Absolutely set up. So centricity is that idea that if there is a proven playbook, there is a pattern that we all go through as we change behavior, as we buy things. And our findings have been that if you'll take time to focus and align sales and align marketing to each other, then you get alignment. No, that's not right. That's not what works. Because who did I leave out of that? The buyer. So guess what? You want to create sales and marketing alignment. The way to do it is to align sales to the buyer and align marketing to the buyer. The net result of that is sales and marketing is aligned. Who cares about sales and marketing alignment? You want to align everybody to this customer, to the buyer's needs as they go through the journey. So sales and marketing alignment is something you, as you look under the hood of so many businesses, what do you see when you're seeing people pursue that? Is that still a hot conversation? Are there some practical thinking that you're seeing around that?
Yeah, I would say some of the trends are, again, small, mid-sized, and large companies, but I'll talk to the mid-sized companies mostly. Marketing is often viewed as an expense and not the strategic understanding that you just talked about. So what is often missing in the executive teams that I work with, leadership teams, is a strategic marketing view. Because really, everything we do in our businesses is marketing, right? What our brand is everything that we do, how we build the product, how we deliver it, how we talk about it. Again, the stories we tell is what I mentioned on the first part of our conversation. So of that internal, external stories, there's strategy on those communications. And so I think of marketing in that sense. And then usually what's thought of as marketing are the tactical things, the way to get some of those messages out to the universe and to track some of those things. And how do we, you know, connect the communication vehicle with our potential buyers and our current clients and all that good stuff. So, but I think, you know, I learned again a long time ago that sales is an emotional exchange of value. The reason to do a sale as a salesperson or as a buyer is because there's going to be a win-win value exchange. It isn't a transaction. Now, if people think it's a transaction, they're probably going to think more about marketing in a transactional manner. So I think folks that are interested in value transfer and exchange are probably going to have the ability at least to think differently about marketing and how that is so connected to the sale.
It's incredible. LinkedIn just released a study that said 87% of sales and marketing leaders believe in this sales and marketing collaboration. That's what's enabled for critical growth. The interesting thing is then they did a follow-up question and 90% of the people in the same group say that their teams are misaligned. Seems like a gap to me. I'm not great at math, but
yeah, I think it's a huge gap and some of it's structural. So when I think about a leader that's running sales and marketing, that's a very common thing. They're combined. So there's a view that the alignment comes with a structural alignment. Same person leads that, they should be on the same. And that usually becomes more of a sales organization with some support from marketing. I think they're very different functions from a structural perspective because one is looking at short-term results, this quarter, this month, getting a good number of sales this month, and those results are measured in that manner. Marketing can be short-term, but it's generally not. It's generally longer-term investment in brand and investment in the whole nurturing of the entire potential buyer group. And so those are longer-term decisions. So how do you connect short-term and long-term? That's where the challenge, I think, comes in the leadership teams. How do you make those different time frames be aligned?
That's interesting. So in that case, you're talking about org structure. I love that. Let's talk about that a little bit further. So there's word growth is a hot word right now. If you looked back 5 years, it was revenue operations that was hot. Before that, you had traditional CMOs and SVPs of sales. And so there's been all these different titles and they're just different flavors. The key argument that I keep seeing all that boil down to is, should sales and marketing be separated? The position I've taken is yes, because you can't look at your feet, today's results, and look at the horizon to see where the business should go strategically, marketing. And you can't do that at the same time. But I'm argued by a lot of executives that I'm wrong, that sales is the, in essence, sales or growth or revenue should be the singular head that's represented at the executive team table. So you see a lot, you're at the table with a lot of companies. So share with the listeners what you see that's working, that works, that doesn't work. Should there be one person at the table? Should there be two? How does a successful CEO set that up to serve the business the best, to serve the customers the best?
I encourage my client CEOs to have a championship team. And so just like on any sports analogy, you know, you're not going to have your quarterback scoring all the touchdowns. So you're not going to have ultimately the one person that's responsible to run the offense, so to speak, in this case, revenue, not having different positions to play. So the structure needs to be separated, but connected. So that's the challenge. I think it is two different, certainly sets of thinking and work streams in terms of sales and marketing, but they're so interrelated that they have to be cross-functional, truly. They have to really be baked together. So I think of more of a Navy SEALs sort of small team approach where you get people that are not necessarily just at the leadership team, but within those sales and marketing organizations where they're really integrated in smaller autonomous teams. I have a couple of clients that are doing that where they are really taking what GE used to do many, many years ago, back when they were wildly successful, where you'd have sort of popcorn stands or ice cream stands where there would be a P&L responsibility for a group or a small business unit instead of one person responsible for all revenue. So that's a long way to say they need to be integrated structurally, but not, I think, at the same person at the leadership team table.
Interesting. Well, I need to get a chief revenue officer on the next podcast and just put y'all in a cage and watch you fight, see how that goes.
I think the CEO is ultimately, you know, chief revenue officer.
That's interesting. And I would argue the CEO almost always has to carry the vision. They're not the vision. They don't carry vision if they don't have an understanding that should be supported by marketing. I don't think a marketer should be dragging the CEO behind them.
Yeah.
You know, because they're looking at the horizon. They should be equipping that CEO. I think I'm right or wrong on that.
I just think, you know, at the end of the day, if the CEO is the head coach, the sales growth or the revenue growth and the ability are the two easiest measures to look at. Is this team being successful from a results perspective?
It's not scalable, right? You can't be the CEO. You can be the CEO of a small business, maybe an emerging middle market business, but at some point that CEO is...
You need a team. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm reminded of, and this will be dated quickly, but Jalen Hurts had one of the most amazing Super Bowls of any quarterback ever in history with Philadelphia Eagles, and they lost. I think he scored 3 or 4 touchdowns. I mean, it was amazing, but it didn't. You could argue needed some wide receivers scoring, needed some running back scoring, needed a tight end scoring. You know, maybe that's unfair.
It was an amazing performance.
But I'm not a Philadelphia fan. I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I'm saying the team was bad. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Ron, marketing has a time-honored riff with finance, the CFO. Talk to me about how to make that work and what's the source of that riff. I've got some great relationships with CFOs, but sure. Overall, if you took a survey, CFOs are suspicious at best.
Well, not to be too challenging, but again, I said this about the marketing presence and the leadership team. I think CFOs are often more transactional and more looking at the expense side of things than being necessarily strategic. So I think CFOs that I know that really believe that the value of the brand and what that can do to create extreme value as you scale 3 years from now, 5 years from now, understand that these investments are necessary. The ones that are counting the cost are not. And so I think that's part of it. I think that also marketers don't do a great job necessarily telling their story in a way that's through the business lens. So how do we not just see the metrics, but really have that evidence that what we're doing here is all about the business growth? It's not about clicks or geofencing or whatever the terms are that are important instruments and tools. But what do you get for that is still ultimately what a CFO wants to understand.
Yeah, which points toward closed loop reporting, right? So that's an expensive thing to pull off. And I can tell you my clients who have closed loop reporting, I can generate and show positive ROI, top line revenue
sure.
that equates. If you don't have it, it just becomes a metric of the day. But if you don't have that, and most people don't, or don't want to spend on it, or can't afford at the time, I think one sure. thing marketers often misunderstand is like there may be major CapEx decisions that have to be made. It's not that they hate marketing. They just got to build stuff and buy stuff.
That's right.
And, you know, so there's
all of our clients have constraints, right?
Some Absolutely.
More than others, but there's still a finite resource.
Whether you use a CRM, marketing automation, advertising platforms, or anything else, keeping track of your current marketing technology can be challenging. And if you need assistance sorting through your existing tech stack, FitzMartin's MarTech Audit is here to help. FitzMartin will audit your organization's currently utilized technology based on 7 categories, analyzing how your organization's tech components are used to see if you are allocating the proper funding to each criterion. The result? It delivers robust ROI savings through reduced tech fees, recommendations for future technology, and more time for your marketers to do their jobs. For more information, check out our show notes or visit FitzMartin.com.
So what would be the 2 or 3 KPIs? Let's say I don't have closed loop reporting, but I'm a CMO and I've got to be taken seriously by the executive team and give a real number that's not vanity metrics.
Well, I think that, you know, sales is going to be your best friend in this. So as you're partnering on the revenue side, you really be able to attribute what either existing business, current clients that are repeating because of that experience and that support from what marketing is doing to help reinforce that, the referrals and other follow-on work that comes from current clients, the voice of the customer input is so valuable that regularly listening to our customers and then improving our products and services based on that is a very important feedback loop that's valuable. And of course, whether it's leads or conversations or effective conversations. So if I'm sales enabled, if I can not only sell well, but I can have those become more effective because I've got the right tools supporting me, there's many, many ways to measure that success.
That's great. Very helpful. Thank you. Three ROM-focused questions. What's your biggest professional win? I'm curious because it takes humility to ask for help, to bring in a consultant. And I want to know how you've most greatly, most impressively helped. Like, what's the biggest win you've had in your role as the leader of Capricorn?
Well, I have had many what I think are important breakthroughs with teams and cultures where sometimes that meant people left the leadership team because they were unhappy and the whole energy shifted. So there's a lot of those qualitative things that have happened. But I'll give one example of a business that was really transformed, not because of me, but because of the work we did together. And that was a manufacturing company that had, when we started working together, they were about $300 million in revenue and they had a giant market share of what they delivered, their main product line. They had over 52% market share and many of their clients were maxed out with what they could buy from them because they needed to have other suppliers just for risk management. And so they were really butting their heads against growth. And so when we started working together, they could not spell R&D. They had no research and development, product development, voice of customer. They had no capability for that whatsoever in the organization. They were really good at making their widget and they sold it really, really well. Fast forward 3 years later, they had completed a merger or an acquisition actually of a company that brought in an R&D capability. Plus they had grown two new product lines that were already successfully being sold in the marketplace to some of the same customers and to some new customers. So that company now, 7 years later, is over $1 billion in revenue because of the investments they made in their product development, their future success, and along the way, their culture and marketing, I might add.
It's amazing. I'm going to have to get that name from you later.
Happy to, yeah.
That's incredible. That's amazing success. And I know you enough, Ram, and I, in full disclosure, have a common client, and I've enjoyed watching you as you coach, lead, guide, direct, and you're very skilled at what you do.
Thank you, sir.
Ram, in their shoes, let's put you back in the executive team. You're now the CEO of this B2B emerging middle market business. You've got X dollars
right
to really impact this top line of revenue. You get to invest in one new initiative. What are you seeing at all your clients that marketing should be doing? And I'm going to focus you on sales and marketing. We'll go there. What are you seeing should be, what's the best investment hit that top line revenue goal that's occurring in the market space today?
Well, I really have two answers for that. One, if I was the CEO, I would know strategically without a doubt where we had to put the money, where we had to invest in terms of either the customers or potential customers that we knew were the right fits for us, because we had done the work to understand our value prop and our ideal customer. And knowing what that is, I would go deeper on that and focus on that instead of trying to go thin or wide with lots of different potential customers. So really sort of doubling down and focusing on what we know works, what we know is profitable, and getting more of that depth would be how I would play that now. No question in my mind. Companies are too widespread. The one I just mentioned, by the way, that had grown, those different product lines, that was because they'd reached their veritable ceiling in that space. Until you get there, I would say you don't need to go wide. You need to continue to go deep. The second answer to that question is the biggest thing that I see my clients missing in the mid-market space is truly understanding how artificial intelligence or other technology trends like that can play a role in making them more efficient and more connected to what's happening. So at least running experiments with that technology at a minimum.
We started 6 months ago, and I told my team, in another 6 months, you'll need to be sales and marketing prompt engineers. And to 90% of the people, that sentence meant nothing.
Yeah.
But you know, if you understand, it's just a tool. It's not going to disrupt sales and marketing. Well, we'll disrupt it. It's not going to substitute. People aren't going away. Sales and marketing won't be replaced by AI. But it's a fascinating time. It's as fascinating as the early 90s when the internet evolving.
Absolutely.
Trying to figure out. Incredible. Great answer. That might have been the next answer. What's the most transformative thing you've seen about sales and marketing in recent years? I'll tell you that in a year, I'll answer it that way.
Sure.
What is the most transformative thing?
I think that will be too. I just think that, I mean, this is kind of an old answer, quite frankly, but the ability to listen and have conversations with our customers in different ways. I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I'd have killed for that sort of intelligence from my customers. So to be able to engage with them in conversations or to have people do that in a way that was meaningful and not just clicking on a survey, those tools are so much more sophisticated now.
If there is a ceiling I see with smaller clients where the executives say, I know my customer. I don't need you marketing, consulting, salespeople to go talk to them. I know them better than anybody. I've been selling to them for 20 years.
Sure.
To which I always reply, that doesn't make sense. And if you'll let me talk to them, I will put my fee at risk. Sure. And if I go talk to five customers and I come back without any information that has any value to you and you don't learn anything new, then I'll give you your money back. And here's why I know that I've never had to give a dollar back. And here's why that's why marriage counseling exists. That's why third parties exist. I will say something to a third party that I will never say to somebody I'm buying from, right? So it's an incredible risk. And the interesting thing is there's a ceiling in that small business space where the CEOs won't let me talk to their customers. And above it, the CEOs say, absolutely, get out there. Now, I want to trust you. I want to know you're going to do it with respect. I know you're going to do it professionally, but get out there and talk. So it's a really interesting line in the sand.
All leaders, including you and I, Sean, have blind spots. There are just things we don't know about ourselves, the things that we do and say, the little patterns and ticks that we have. And if you manifest that out to an organization that has blind spots, there is no way for us to know all of those things, even though we know our customers well over a long period of time. We only know what we know. We know how we've engaged with them with our awareness and knowledge. So not having a wider lens and more people helping us see that and see the whole picture, the true picture, is a huge mistake.
And it's not a mistake. It's not a foible to say that you want somebody else to come in and help you understand.
It's not a sign of weakness.
No, it's not a sign
of
weakness.
It's a sign of strength, actually, to be asking for more.
Another sign of strength is asking for help when you need it. Rom, tell me how, if I want your help, I can get it.
Well, you know, I'm not huge on social media. I do LinkedIn stuff. I will admit that. So my network on LinkedIn is important to me. I do have a newsletter from CapricornLeadership.com and a blog that I keep pretty active. And so those are really the best places to see me at the website or LinkedIn. And then, of course, workshops are a common way that I get to know people, their leadership teams, if there's going to be a good fit for us. That is a very low barrier of entry, but it can really tell us a lot about if we're going to be a good fit together or not. So, and all that information is on the website.
And that website is CapricornLeadership.com. And I can't spell worth a lick. I hope y'all can. CapricornLeadership.com. CapricornLeadership.com. Leadership.com. I've had the chance to work with Rom, and I've seen him with both long-term vision, short-term focus, driving meaningful results, and it is worth listening to what he says. He's very talented. He's done it. He's done it before. It's a repeatable. There's low risk in hiring Rom. I'll give you that. So thank you so much for joining us on Centricity. I know I've learned a lot from you in both episodes. I'm going to continue to follow along, read your newsletter. Listeners, I hope you gained some insights today. That's our goal. Keep up with Rom. Add him to your list. We will see you in the next episode.
Thanks, Sean.
We sure appreciate you listening today. If you would like to get in contact with today's guest or stay in touch with us, visit our show notes. Additionally, to get the latest strategies for the alignment between marketing and sales, visit fitzmartin.com. As a reminder, if you have found value in today's episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, thanks for listening.